ॐ भरताय प्रतिपूजितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथितां पुराणमुनिना मन्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अहं भक्त्वामनुसन्धामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी सदृशं चेष्टते स्वस्याः सदृशं चेष्टते स्वस्याः प्रकृतिर्ज्ञानवानपि प्रकृतिर्ज्ञानवानपि प्रकृतिं याति भूतानि प्रकृतिं याति भूतानि निग्रहः किं करिष्यति निग्रहः किं करिष्यति सदृशं चेष्टते स्वस्याः प्रकृतेः ज्ञानवान् अपि प्रकृतिं यान्ति भूतानि निग्रहः किं करिष्यति This whole section, Krishna's talking about the Karma Yoga. The value for Karma Yoga, those who follow Karma Yoga, those who don't, how it's necessary, that Karma Yoga Buddhi is necessary in order to have Antakarana Shuddhi. You know, it's what, in fact, the Karma Yoga in different ways, whether it's in Buddhism or all of the different religions or spiritual disciplines, are all primarily dealing with gaining a proper attitude toward the world and toward yourself that will allow the mind to have shanti on a relative level. And so that's, from the Vedanta, they really approach it as karma yoga, that karma yoga buddhi gives you that. If it's understood, that attitude will just across the board in every walk of life, internally and externally, in your internal relationships and external relationships bring about that shanti. And so now the question comes up, in a sense. Krishna says, Jnanavan api, even the jnani, even the one who has self-knowledge, sadrisham cheshtate, that jnani acts in accordance with sadrisham, means in the same way, in accordance with cheshtate, he acts. Swasyaha prakritehe. Even a jnani is going to act in accordance with his or her own prakriti. And here prakriti means nature. I'll tell you a little bit more about that. So in accordance with their own nature, even the jnani is going to act in accordance with that. Why? Prakritim yanti bhutani. Because all beings, bhutani, all beings follow their own nature. Any being will do that. It's going to act in accordance with its own nature. Even the jnani. But that being so, nigraha kim karishati. What's the use? What's the good of any type of nigraha, of any type of restraint then? If everybody's just going to be acting according to their own nature, then what's the use of, where does restraint come in? So that's the question that Krishna's going to be dealing with here. But What Shankara says here about this, about the prakriti that we're defining, what we're translating as nature, he says, purva krita dharma adharma adi samskaraha vartamana janmadau abhivyaktaha sa prakritihi. He says, the prakriti is that which is being manifest now, here, in this birth. Right? And what is it that's being manifest now in this birth? The samskaras, tendencies, such as dharma and adharma, etc., all tendencies, purvakrita dharma, that came about prior, from prior births. So in other words, when you take this birth, so it's really an interesting thing to understand, because it's not just prior births, you have to understand it in this life also, because we're also gaining samskaras, gaining impressions and tendencies, subtle raga dveshas, subtle likes and dislikes here in this birth itself. But the person that you are, the upadhi, the body, mind, sense organs that you came in with, the family that you're surrounded by, the certain nature that you have in terms of your personality and the gifts that you have, like you may be an artist or you may be a mathematician or you may be in the healing profession, whatever it is, maybe you're a lawyer, whatever, or and musician, whatever the things that are natural to you, you came in with that and then you watch your life kind of develop, the thread of your life develop. Whatever it is your nature. And then in amidst that, so you come in with a certain nature, and then as you go on experiencing life, you also gain, on top of that nature, likes and dislikes, preferences. You know, and the Swamiji always tells the story, like say the difference between a Tamilian and a North Indian, in terms of their food preferences. I mean, a Tamilian is raised on, you know, idlis and dosas, and coconut chutney and Madras coffee, and that's what they like to eat.
Yeah, if
they go to the north, they'll eat the North Indian food because that's what's being served, but that's not their preference. Okay? And so you're going to always be gravitating toward your preference. But it's even deeper than that. We think of it if we gravitate toward our likes and dislikes. But what about the very thoughts that even arise in your mind? The feelings, the tendencies, the thoughts, the desires that rise in your mind for you to either pursue or not pursue. Those are all prakriti. Those are all your nature. They all come from the past. Right? Because why would you have this preference as opposed to this one? And so all of this has to do with your nature, even for a jnani. So a jnani, even jnana nishta, you still have thoughts. Right? You still have tendencies. You still have preferences. Your desires are going to be one way, not another. You'll have your own set of desires, your own set of likes and dislikes. That's the prakriti. And that's going to be true for all beings, including jnanis. Now, the thing is, unless some type of value system comes in, unless there's an underlying value system, which also becomes part of your nature, right, you will simply follow the prakriti. Right? If a desire comes, then this is what I'll do. I'm not going to do something that I have no desire for. So I just simply follow my nature as it manifests moment after moment after moment after moment. And that is true for every being. So that being so, if every being just follows their nature like this, where is the use? What's the use of any nigraha? And doesn't this, any kind type of restraint, and doesn't this also kind of invalidate the shastra? Doesn't it invalidate dharma adharma where free will is necessary? And so this is kind of bringing in this question. It's like Krishna is baiting Arjuna in a way, saying, you know, even jnanis do this. So that being the case then, well, what's the use of any type of free will when that's the case? So let's look at this. Next verse. Indriyasya indriyasya arthe. Indriyasya indriyasya arthe. Raga dvesha vyavastitau. Raga dvesha vyavastitau. Tayorna vashama gacchet. Tayorna vashama gacchet. Tau hyasya paripantinau. Tau hyasya paripantinau. Indriyasya. Indriyasya arte raga dveshau vivastitau tayor tayoho okay, na vasham agachet tau hi asya paripantinau. It says indriyasya means for every sense organ. We duplicate like that, indriya. Means for every sense organ's object, arte. So in the arte is the object. So indriartasya, sense object. Right. So for all the sense objects, raga and dvesha, the likes and dislikes, vyavasthi tao, are definitely going to be there, right? Depending on, when you say vyavastha, it means that in any given situation, a sense object has the capacity of being liked or disliked, right? So raga dvesha, these likes and dislikes are there. We can say it like this, the possibility of raga dvesha is there for every sense object. Some people will like it, some don't like it, sometimes you like it, sometimes you don't like it. So raga and dvesha are like an intrinsic part. They belong to the sense organs. It's like a law. The law of raga and dvesha are there in reference to all sense objects. So what is raga? It's just, raga is your positive desire towards something. Dvesha is your negative desire to get away from something. So dvesha is things you hate. Sometimes dvesha is just translated as hate. Raga, things you like. So raga, dvesha belong to the sense organs, right? They're directed toward the sense organs. So he says, in reference to all of the for all of the sense organs, raga and dvesha are there. Now, for these two, for the raga and dvesha, navasham agachet, one should not come under the control of the raga dvesha. Okay? Because they're there. Raga dvesha is there for everybody. For jnani, for everybody, there's going to be likes and dislikes. That's not a question. The problem, though, is that it's not a matter of getting rid of the likes and dislikes. It's whether or not the likes and dislikes control you. So one should not agachate, na agachate. One should not come under the vasham. Vasham means to be swallowed up by or controlled by. So one should not come under the control of these raga dvesha. Why? He says, hi asya parikantinao. Because for the person, these are the enemy. These are your enemy. Raga dvesha are the enemy. Right? So it's actually, to really understand, it's very kind of subtle. It's simple and subtle in a way. This is the idea. You will, just because you're a human being, and because you have the prarabdha karma, you have previous karmas, you have just life experience, you will definitely have raga dvesha. And those raga dvesha are what propel you to act. Right? That's it. You're going to go toward, naturally as a human being, you be propelled to act toward the things that are positive and away from the things that are negative. That's how the life works. But now, the thing is, having these raga dveshas meaning that you'll be propelled this way or propelled that way, is there anybody else inside, right, that can make a decision in reference to whether or not acting upon that particular raga or dvesha is good for me? Do I have the capacity to say no? Do I have the capacity to allow the raga dvesha to be there and to decide to act or not to act? If I don't have that capacity, then I am just, as part of the maya, really, as part of the whole prakriti, as an object, as part of the entire, the whole manifest creation, which is continually acting at all times and moving, I will just be part of that motion. See what I mean? Whatever comes up inside to go toward this, I just go that way. Something comes up to get away from this, I just get away from it. That's the end of it. And that's what's naturally driving a person. Unless you are the one who is holding the raga dvesha. And that's how it has to be. You have to be the one who's holding the raga dvesha. And then you have a choice. Otherwise, the raga dvesha is holding you. And the Swamiji is a funny example in his Bhasha. He talks about, what about in India, where there's all the kings and queens and princesses and princes, this type of thing. A commoner, what if a commoner, just a regular person, sees a beautiful princess? He sees this beautiful princess and he thinks, she is so beautiful, you know, I would really love to marry her. I would really love to marry her. Now, what if you were to pursue that? Accepting where there's no possibility. Right? That's what was Swamiji's point. There's no possibility. But what if he doesn't have the viveka to enjoy the desire? Because there's nothing wrong with the desire. She's a beautiful princess. I would love to marry her. He can totally enjoy the desire and the raga. But the problem comes in is when he takes that seriously as being something that he would actually should actually do. And if that were the if that's the case, and that often is the case, mm-hmm. since where there is no buddhi, there's no viveka, you know, to allow these desires to pass through and decide which one I'm going to act on and which one I'm not. And so when that's the case, there's a big problem there. So now he says, let's go to the next verse. Shreyan svataramo vigunaha. Shreyan svataramo vigunaha. Padadharmat svanushtitat. Padadharmat svanushtitat. Svatarame nitanam shreyaha. Svatarame nitanam shreyaha. Padadharmo payavahaha. Padadharmo payavahaha. Shreyan svadharmaha vigunaha padadharmat svanushtitat. Actually, su anushtitat, so svanushtitat. Svadharme nitanam shreyaha padadharmaha bhaya avahaha. I'll do this verse and make the connection after we translate it. He says, Shreyan Swadharmaha. One's own dharma, Swadharma. What is your duty? I'll talk about Swadharma in a minute. But one's own dharma is Shreyas. It is best for a person always to do one's own duty, one's own dharma. Vigunaha. Even if you don't do it perfectly. Right. Even if your duty is, if you're not doing it perfectly, but even then, it is best, it is shreyas, best for you to do your own dharma, as opposed to what? Padadharmat svanushtitat. It is better to do your own dharma than to do the dharma of another person, another person's duty or responsibilities, even if done perfectly, su anushtitat. It's better to do your own dharmas imperfectly than to do your another person's dharmas perfectly. Okay. Then he says, Svadharme nitanam shreyaha. It is even better to die, to be killed, nitanam. It is shreyas. It is better to be killed within in your own dharma, doing your own dharma. It is better to die doing your own dharma. Why? Padadharmaha. Because another's dharma, bhayavaha, will overwhelm you with fear. The other person's dharma will overwhelm you with fear. So, in the Bhashas and how Swamiji also deals with this and is touched lightly on with Shankara. For somebody who's a mumukshu, who's really committed to the shastra and trying to gain jnana-nishtha, to really gain this knowledge, the focus of the mind is going to be not on your raga-dveshas. It's not about raga-dveshas. The likes and dislikes are there. It's not about repressing the raga-dveshas. It's not about not having the raga-dveshas. But it's about having the focus be on your duty. And in India, this concept of duty is huge as opposed to what are my rights. Swamiji talks all the time about this. In fact, for years I've heard him talk on this. And the idea is this. You have certain responsibilities. Those are your duties. Those duties are come along with your life. In fact, every moment that you're alive, there's certain duties, expectations, so that you feel, when you feel that you're doing your duties, the things that are expected of you, you'll feel good inside. Because you're doing your dharma. You know? And this, you don't have to go back into India, into the caste system, into all of these type of things, where India is a very, very highly structured society. You don't have to worry. We don't have to have that. They don't need to have it either. They barely have it anyway. Your life itself, the prarabdha karma of your life, gives you your dharma, the things that are expected of you that you need to do in a given situation. And it's on that, those duties that present themselves to you day after day after day, that's where the focus is. You know, that's where the value is. The raga dveshas are fine if they don't conflict with your dharma, with your dharma, right? So the raga dveshas are always secondary, and they're secondary because for a mumukshu, because I'm trying to have a mind that's not dependent on a mind that is actually free of raga dvesha. Now by that I mean, for the jnani's mind to be free of raga dvesha means what? That the source of ananda is not the fulfillment of a like or dislike. That's the fact of it. In fact, that's the truth. That the source of the mind's source of ananda really has nothing to do with raga dvesha. Because the source of ananda for the mind is the self. And so, now, how to break the attachment of the mind on this structure that we've, this illusion, actually, that we've had going on from beginningless time, beginningless lifetimes. How to break that structure that, oh, I want this, I want this so that I can be happy. That's the template. And that's the template for a raga. I want this so that I can be happy. I want to get away from the dvesha. I want to get away from this so that I can be happy. This is the template that drives all beings. And so now the vision comes along and makes you recognize as the unfoldment is taking place, you see clearly that the source of the ananda, which the mind experiences, has nothing to do at all with the fulfillment of raga dvesha. Because the ananda that the mind experiences, the source of the ananda that the mind experiences, has for its being the self, not an object. That's why an object of raga can turn into an object of dvesha. Right? An object of raga can turn in for you at another time an object of dvesha. An object of raga for you right now at this moment, the same object, can be an object of dvesha for somebody else. Right? So the raga dvesha, the ananda doesn't belong to the object, and yet our whole nature, the prakriti itself, has only been flowing in that direction. Right? That is the motive. Raga dvesha is the great motivator. And so now, how to turn it around? How to turn that around? How to turn this river around? Right? It's through knowledge, the knowledge, the understanding, and then an attitude of mind, right? An attitude of mind that's bringing the mind, bringing the sense organs back from the raga dvesha through another understanding. And focusing on, have your focus be, so there's a neutralization. In fact, it's called Pratipaksha Bhavana, and it's another way that Pratipaksha Bhavana is used. Shankara talks about it in the verse here. When the mind goes out after a raga or a dvesha, what is the neutralizing factor? What's to neutralize it? What brings it back? What brings the mind back? You know, like say if you say, for instance, just a simple, but just a template. I really need this to be happy. All right. So now that's the desire is rooted in it's come. I really need this to be happy. What's the pratipaksha? What's the opposing statement? No, I don't. Okay, so I really need this to be happy. No, I don't. Why? Why don't I need it to be happy? Well, because the ananda doesn't exist in the object, it exists in me. I can see that. That's the pratipaccha bhavana. That's what neutralizes it. You can't just say it. I mean, it has to be a statement that you know is the truth of it. Mm-hmm. Okay? So once you say that, once you see that, you now that's the pratipaccha. You've brought in the other side. That neutralizes the reality of the desire. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't end up fulfilling that particular desire, but you have a different stance on it, where it's not holding you. You have a choice. And so that ability, in fact, I was listening to the Dalai Lama's Art of Happiness. I was listening to an audio on it, and he was saying, one thing he said, and I said, okay, that's very nice. He said he spends about 4 hours a day in the morning doing kind of a sadhana for himself, for his different meditations and that type of thing. But he talks about these kind of raga dveshas, these desires, you know. And he'll say, what for him, like say if he goes, he uses an example, say if he goes into the supermarket, he'll see all these things. He sees all these things, he'll think, I want that. I want that. And then this pratipaccha will come in and he'll say to him, do you really need that? And then he'll say, no. He'll walk around some more, I want that. Do I really need that?
No.
And he has, when he says that, do I really need that? It's true probably for all of us on many, many levels that no, physically, in the physical world, this is absolutely just another thing that I don't require. There's that level too. So we can use it on that level, just simplify, simplify, simplify. We get all this junk that we don't really need at all. And foods and whatnot that are excess. We don't need them. So there's that level also. But there's another level that has to do with I don't really need anything. It's the very nature of the need. I don't need, in this way, I don't need this object to be full. I don't need you to be in a particular way to be full. I don't need my life to unfold in a particular way to be full. Why? Because my fullness is not dependent on the world. The fullness isn't dependent on the universe. It's not dependent on the mind. It is actually my nature. And so, and that nature is not going to go anywhere, and the world can't give it to me or take it away. Like the world is that my being is free of the manipulation of the world. The world can't do anything about it. And my mind can never be away from myself. There's never a time that the mind is away from yourself. And so the only thing that can happen, since the mind by its nature, by just by the sattva that it is, it can never at any time be anything other or away from yourself, then the only problem that the mind has is its own agitations, right? And then what happens is the wholeness of myself is illumining and pervasive to a painful mental state. Then nothing happens to the wholeness of myself or the fullness of myself, but the mind has generated a painful mental state. Why has the mind generated a painful mental state? This is where the karma yoga comes in. It generates a painful mental state because I want something to be different so that I can be happy. It's very simple. I need this in order to be happy, and I'm not getting it. And so that is making me upset. And that's about the end of it. That's it. So now the question is, how to be with these raga dveshas? Because that's what they are. That's what it boils down to. Because everything in the world, every object in the world, every experience in the world can have this raga dvesha attached to it. And if I follow that, if that overwhelms me, then that becomes the reality that's surrounding me at that time. Right? The raga dvesha has overwhelmed me. And now my happiness is dependent on things being in a way that they are not right now. Right? And so then I have to suffer. I have to suffer that. And so when I'm grabbed like that, or when my mind is starting to take me on that trip, I have to bring in the pratipaksha, the opposing attitude, you know, or the opposing knowledge. Or Swamiji will just say, I have to bring in viveka, you know, in order to bring my mind back to the reality. And we just do that over and over and over again until the mind becomes accustomed to that. We bring the mind back to what we know. We bring the mind back to our vision. And why does it work? It works because it's true. Right? If it wasn't true, then it wouldn't work. But it is true, and so it does work. What works? Well, the fact is that the more relaxed my mind becomes, the more ananda it enjoys. And so there's a tremendous reward. When your mind is at peace, it enjoys, it's as though a very clear water bucket or clear mirror reflecting the sun. The mind, the nature of the mind is in absolute harmony with the nature of yourself. And so you don't have a foreign object inside. Right? When the mind is reacting, it's like there's a foreign body inside that's hurting you. When the mind is relaxed, you feel, you know, completely at peace. And so the mind learns to gains its deepest value is to be at peace. You know, and you can say to be just to allow to be with things as they are. Be interested in things as they are. And in that attitude, you can be interested in things as they are, accepting things as they are, and then within that, you can try to change things. But that's, you're changing things that you accept as they are. See what I mean? If you can do that, then the mind enjoys a level of peace. And so it becomes something that's not itself experiencing pain. We like to have a mind that's not experiencing pain. Right? It's just because that's natural. When the mind's experiencing pain, it's as though a what's the word? I was just reading about this the other day, and Swamiji's also talked about. You know, I was reading something where they're talking about the great value of pain, for a physical pain. That physical pain is there to call attention to something, mm-hmm. right? That you need to fix. If there was no warning like that. You know, you wouldn't go toward that to take care of it. And emotional, mental pain is like that too. There's something that needs to be fixed. There's something, an attitude that needs to be fixed. I need to be with that in a different way. Or in relationship, I need to be with that person in a different way. I need to be with myself in a different way. And the physical, the mental, emotional pain points to that. That I'm off kilter there. And so then I have to be with that pain. And sometimes it's painful to be with that pain, especially if I'm the one who's off. You know? You know what I'm saying? Like, say in an interpersonal relationship, you're the one that's off. And you're the one that has, not that the other people aren't off too, but, yeah. But you're the one that's off sometimes. And that's painful. Because you're the one then that has to change. And sometimes getting to a place where you can change is not the easiest thing. But you have to. You have to in order to get out of the painful mental state. You know? And so it's very, very, it can be very, very challenging. You know, and it takes a lot of you have to be very kind to yourself. You have to be very kind to others. You have to be very kind to yourself. But you have to work on it because you don't have a choice. Right? Just like if you have physical pain, you have to work on it because the pain it calls your attention. You know? And emotional pain, mental pain, calls you to that work. It won't let you go. You can't, you know. You can say, oh, yeah, I have mental pain, so what am I going to do? I'm in terrible mental, emotional pain right now, so what am I going to do? You will come up with something to do. And what you come up with to do is based upon your understanding and your knowledge. Okay? Mm-hmm. So now what if you come up with this? You might say, when I'm with pain, I just simply sit with it and I don't reject it. And that's a good thing to do. Most people won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're doing something with it. And you have a reason for doing that. You know? Or I'm in terrible emotional pain right now. What do I do? Well, let me talk to it and let it talk to me to find out what's really bad. What's really, really bothering me. Okay. That's something to do. That's a tool. What if the emotional pain is caused by... something that you have said to another person that has hurt them and made them angry, even though you meant it. Right? you meant it, and you were angry too. But the problem is that it's left you in emotional pain. Right? And so the fact is, how are you going to solve that? And so you sit with it for one day, and next day, still here. You sit for it another, next day, it's still here. I'm still not free. You know, how are you gonna, what are you gonna do to solve that? And so you need some tools.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You need some tools to be able to solve it. You know, one of the great tools that we have is this Pratipaksha Bhavana, which is a little different. Say you've done something to alienate or isolate yourself from another person. These are the things that are, I think, the most painful. Where we do something that isolates us from another person and then we feel shunned. That person comes back and shuns us. You know? So how to deal with it? Because now we're hurt inside, plus we're being shunned by that person. You know? Swamiji actually said that one of the worst punishments for a human being is to shun them. And that is the punishment in the villages, in the Brahmin villages that they used to use.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody did an adharma or misbehaved in the village would shun them.
Mm-hmm.
Pretend like they're dead. And they would be there, poor speakers. They'd be there. They'd pretend like they don't exist. Won't talk to them. Won't acknowledge them.
Mm-hmm.
Total shunning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a terrible... terrible punishment. Now say, we do that to each other sometimes. Say you get into a negative reaction with somebody and say something or whatever. That your reaction, even if they deserved it, in your mind, isolates you from the person. Right? Definitely. So you feel isolated. That's a self-imposed shunning. And then if the person is angry at you back, that's a shunning that's coming from the outside. So this has to be resolved. Right? Otherwise your heart is burning with pain. So how to resolve it? One way is the Pratipaksha Bhavana, which is internal. The internal Pratipaksha Bhavana is where you reimagine that situation and that person. And you offer them a flower, whatever that flower would be for you. You offer them a flower. And imagine friendship with the person. That's not always easy. Even emotionally, to be able to change the knot, to imagine that friendship or well-being, or to imagine that person and all the things that you like about that person until you feel the heart relaxing, You're breaking the knot internally. Once you break the knot internally, then you can give a flower to the physical person. You can actually give a flower to the physical person to get out of this mess. Why get out? Because I don't want to be in pain. That's all. I don't want to be in pain. I want you to be as you are. I want to be able to be with myself as I am. I don't want my mind to be demanding in such a way that it causes me this kind of pain. This is all karma yoga. It's all tools. And why do we use all of these tools in kind of training the mind? What does the mind in the end have to realize? On all levels, it has to realize that I am the ananda I seek. I am the ananda I seek, so I don't have to do anything. I don't have to do anything to make myself whole and complete. And if I don't have to do anything to make myself whole and complete, then what should I be doing here in this life? I should be doing my dharma. What is there to be done? What is there before me to be done? And why should I do what is dharmic? What is there before me to be done? Very simple. Because if I don't, then I am bringing on pain to myself. If I don't do the dharma that is my dharma, that is right there in front of me to be done, then what am I doing? Am I doing somebody else's dharma? Well, that's not going to work because it's not what's being required of me. It's being what's being required of another person. And so now if I'm trying to do somebody else's dharma, then in terms of the entire creation, I'm stepping outside of myself. And I'm stepping outside of my own prarabdha. And there is no place for me in the creation outside of my own prarabdha. Right? Look at it like this. This whole room, just this room, this whole room is Ishvara. Every single part of it. Every jiva in the room is part and parcel of Ishvara. Everyone has their own karma. They have their own place. Right? Say you don't want your place. But that is your place. Well, I don't want that place. Well, where should we put you then? You can't really have somebody else's place because they're already there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so if you may probably have had this experience, I know I have, where I pushed up against the walls of my own prarabdha and is getting into somebody else's prarabdha, or certainly not mine. And when you start pushing against the wall of your prarabdha, you feel fear. You feel isolated and fear. And it makes you scurry back into the space of your own life. So when you start getting outside of the prarabdha of yourself, you do feel fear because there's no room for you there. Right? This tree, this life, the one that's growing, is the one that you have. And it's surrounded by, and it's here for you completely because it's yours. That's another really important thing to remember, and it's a good meditation to remember that your prarabdha, the karmas that brought you here that are taking you all the way through to your death and then onward, okay, this prarabdha is yours. Nobody can take it away from you. And what isn't yours, you won't get. And so that's also, these are little understandings, the mind, because you can trust that the prarabdha, your life, the opportunities that are meant for you, those things will come your way. And so those things are that's your dharma. And so those things that come your way, that's what you do. And you do your duty, whatever it is there. Don't worry about the raga dveshas, because the raga dveshas can just take you on a trip away from your knowledge. So you don't worry about the raga dveshas. You do the dharma that is there to be done, really for the sake of antakarana shuddhi, you know, so that the mind can let Ishvara be Ishvara. Right? That's what it amounts to. You let Ishvara be Ishvara in you, and you appreciate that. If you're doing your own dharma as much as imperfectly as you do, may do, you are still within your space. If you move out and try to do another's dharma, you're in territory that doesn't support you at all. And so you don't even feel like yourself. It's like trying to be, the mind doesn't even feel like itself because you're trying to be somebody else. There's no support for it. So it's better. And he, remember, he's talking to Arjuna now. And he's telling Arjuna, you know, you're much better off staying here as the Kshatriya, fighting this war and getting killed in this war, than trying to go off into the forest and be a Brahmana and take sannyasa. That's somebody else's dharma. That's not yours. That's not who you are. You have to live your life, you know, and work out your own karmas. And in that way, you'll feel you'll be safe. So he says. Let's stop there. What's the next thought, Tom? Purnamada, Purnamada, Purnat, Purnamudachate, Purnasya, Purnamadaya, Purnamevavasishate, Om Shanti, 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Namaha, Hari Om.